The Pat Kenny Show on News Talk.
Laser technology has transformed modern ophthalmology. Joining me for this week's expert slot is Arthur Cummings of the Wellington Eye Clinic at the Beacon to explain just how the different types of lasers are now used, not just to treat disease, but to precisely alter, repair, and even stimulate the eye at a microscopic level. Arthur, good morning and welcome.
Good morning, Pat. Thank you very much.
And any questions, we welcome them, 087 1400 106 by WhatsApp. So how many kinds of lasers are there?
There are four different categories. But Pat, you know, when you asked to speak about this specifically, I gave some more thought. And I just thought about how lasers play a role in the clinic. There's so many lasers before we speak about the therapeutic lasers. So even the diagnostics of doing the calculation for a lens implant with biometry, that's done with a laser. Or looking at OCT, looking at the back of your eye, that's done with a laser. There's so much imaging in ophthalmology today, and all of those images are stored with the use of laser and transmitted around the clinic with the use of laser. You know, intranet's all laser. Yeah.
Now, I remember the first time I came across lasers was probably in a James Bond film where Roger Moore is strapped to a bench and the laser's about to cut him in two.
Exactly.
Obviously using the heat of that laser to cut through metal or the human body. But lasers are not always used for their heat.
No. In fact, today, all the ophthalmic lasers are basically cold. So there are four main categories. The first one's a laser that can cut. And a laser that can cut, we would use after cataract surgery for a YAG laser capsulotomy, or even during cataract surgery, is called a femtosecond laser. Then there's lasers that can reshape. And they're the lasers we know well from LASIK and PRK and vision correction surgery. Then there are lasers that can burn. And so they would use a bit of heat, and they were used traditionally for diabetic retinopathy, but they destroy tissue in a very constructive way to save the resources of the retina locally. But transitioning away from that, they're more, you know, approaches now that are more tissue protective. And then the last ones are very interesting, and this is a space that ophthalmology is going, and that is lasers that stimulate, or they innovate resources within the retina to heal itself. So that happens in glaucoma, SLT, and in retinal work.
Okay.
So micropulse lasers.
So someone who's got glaucoma and may lose their sight, lasers can help prevent it going the final step. Is that
absolutely. In many, many ways, many different ways. So traditionally, up until quite recently, if you got glaucoma, the first thing you would do is start with drops. Now that's transitioning to the first treatments, in fact, the laser treatment. That doesn't burn anything. It just stimulates the trabecular meshwork, which is the drainage system for the aqueous, to repopulate with new cells, and it functions better again. So it's sort of restoring your local biology.
I'll read you some of the questions already coming in. My wife had laser eye surgery about 3 years ago, and initially the results were excellent. However, over the past 15 months, her vision has deteriorated quite quickly, and she's now back to wearing glasses. Could you explain why this might happen? Is it common, and would it be worth considering the procedure again? She was also given a lifetime guarantee, but we're currently finding it difficult to get in contact with the company, which I won't name. Is there something that you hear of often?
No, it's not a thing that happens often, but depending on the prescription that was done, something we learned in about 2017, it became more mainstream, that is when you treat the cornea and you change the shape, the skin on the surface, it's called the epithelium, it can remodel, and the skin may change in a way that's unpredictable. So today we can map the skin, it's about the thickness of a hair, you can map the skin, and based on the skin profile, you can figure out what was done before, and based on the response that the skin had, you can use that predictively to make an adjustment to the cornea now, anticipating what the additional response from the skin will be. So it's not unheard of, not by any stretch of the imagination, but we know where it's coming from now. It's coming from the epithelium, and it can be dealt with.
Yeah, but I mean, tracking down the original surgeon should be fairly straightforward.
That should be straightforward. Yeah, you should have a relationship with the surgeon in the clinic that you can say, I've got a problem, I need to have this looked at again.
I'm texting about my son who's nearly 22 years old. He's around -6, -7, and his eyesight is still changing, needing stronger and stronger glasses. When does this normally settle, and can he get laser surgery while this is happening, or does his sight need to be stable? He wears contact lenses and glasses, and laser surgery would be great for him.
Yeah, it's
what
a very
age,
good question. Then? And so we don't start until you're 18 is a good time to start. And even though you mightn't have completely stabilized by then, what we have found over the years, we've been doing this for 34 years now, what we have found over the years that the number one thing you can do to stop it changing is, in fact, to treat it. So there's a treatment for myopia today. We've spoken about this before, called orthokeratology, which is a contact lens you wear at night. It reshapes the epithelium.
Okay, like it, braces on the teeth.
Yes, exactly. And it wears off during the day. And tonight you put the lens in again, and tomorrow you've got the effect of it again. And so what we've seen from that is when you treat the cornea in a way where you treat the central part of the cornea to correct the vision, but the peripheral part remains at the -2 or the -6, you actually build instability. So laser surgery for a patient as myopic can in fact stabilize the myopia.
This one, I'm a 47-year-old woman. I have -6.75 prescription in both eyes and fairly bad double vision. Varifocals haven't worked for me as the prism isn't strong enough in the lower part of the lens to correct double vision. I've recently started to have age-related reading issues and I'm going between two pairs of glasses. Would I be a candidate for laser or would I still need glasses? That's from Kay.
Yeah, Kay, that's a very, very good question and it's quite nuanced. It's quite tricky. And what you'd have to do, your best solution, just off the top of my head, sounds like a blended vision approach where you have the one eye for distance, the one eye for near. And in that scenario, you wouldn't need a prism because when you're looking in the distance, the dominant eye is focusing in the distance.
Well, I am that soldier. I mean, I use one eye for reading and the other eye for distance.
Yes, so do I.
And after a while, the brain does the business for you.
Exactly. But the reason you're seeing double is because both eyes can see far with one set of glasses and with the other set of glasses, both eyes can see near, but you need a different strength of prism. So it's really irritating. When you do blended vision, one eye for distance, one eye for near, the brain can easily blur or suppress the eye you don't need. And so you actually address the blended vision or the double vision at the same time you do the visual requirement. And the best way to test that is with the contact lens trial. So the easiest thing is you wear contact lenses that demonstrate that, and you'll be the judge of whether it's a good solution for you or not.
I have a 14-year-old boy who has just found out that he needs glasses. He's very unhappy. Can he get laser surgery? The prescription is -1.25. He's short-sighted. Not very short-sighted, -1.25. But, contact lenses might be daily disposables.
Absolutely. But, Pat, it's very interesting. It's a very good point. I'm glad this came up. Is even though he's too young for laser, what he needs to do at -1 as a 14-year-old, he's still at the stage while he's growing, where the eye can grow and his myopia can increase. So he needs to be with an optometrist who does myopia control. So they can wear special glasses or special contact lenses or ortho-K contact lenses that slow down the progression of myopia. Because for every diopter of myopia you increase, your risk down the road for glaucoma, for cataract, for retinal problems increases. So you want to try and keep the overall error as low as you possibly can so that you're suitable for more procedures once you can have procedures.
This one, I have glaucoma and I've had a TREB operation on my left eye, but I'm reluctant to have it done on the right eye because it's very invasive. Is there a laser alternative? That's from Jim in Cork.
That's a very good question. So once you're doing trabeculectomy, it's serious glaucoma. This is with a glaucoma specialist. They'll give you the best answers. What's currently undergoing FDA trials that looks very promising is a femtosecond laser that can do a trabeculectomy very non-invasively. Very accurately. So that might be the future. But for now, the gold standard in glaucoma remains a trabeculectomy, but in the hands of a good glaucoma surgeon.
This one, I have the RDH12 gene and I'm losing my sight. I'm so desperate to try to hold on to what sight I have left. I know I'll never be able to get back what I've lost, but I'm willing to do anything to keep the small amount of sight I have left. I'm open to clinical trials or whatever. Any advice? I'm beyond desperate at this stage.
Absolutely. So I don't know off the top of my head what that gene is, but I'm guessing it's a retinal gene that's playing a role in a retinal condition. There's a very, very good unit for retinal inherited diseases in Ireland at the Eye and Ear Hospital. Paul Kenny used to look after that. Now Emma Deignan does. And so I would get in touch with that unit. They'd be up to speed with what can be done.
Can you ask about chronic dry eye, please?
Oh, yeah. Chronic dry eye is the bane of every ophthalmologist's life. It's so common today, and it's mostly because of our lifestyle, where we spend so much time on screens, including phones. Second thing would be the side effect of medications, things like antihistamines or cholesterol medications or antihypertensives. A lot of medications cause dryness. And we don't blink properly. So fundamentally, it's just about, first of all, doing the basic hygiene, blinking properly, make sure the little glands that produce oil and protect the tear layer are functioning well. So almost every optometrist today and most ophthalmologists would have an interest in the tear film because it's so important in vision. And I'm going to have it checked out properly by someone who tells you they're interested in dry eye.
This is a fascinating one. I mean, we're in the middle of the biggest, open clinical trial in history. Can you ask your expert if he has seen a link between blindness and weight loss jabs?
Wow, now that's interesting. That's very interesting. So I've not seen it, but I've read about it. So the journals are now full of it. And there's some very interesting ones where some of the medications people are using for quick weight loss are causing something called ischemic optic neuropathy or a non-ischemic optic neuropathy where the nerve suddenly just stops functioning properly and you can lose sight. That's irreversible. And they're more inclined to get a stroke of the back of the eye. So it's something when you do take a medication to lose weight like that, you must be doing it under the care of your GP or a weight loss specialist.
So there is something in the literature.
There is something in the literature, without a doubt, yeah.
My eyes are shaped like a rugby ball. I was told I'm unable to get laser. Is that still the case these days?
No, not at all. And even these days isn't true. So in 1997 already, we started doing LASIK for astigmatism. It's got better and better, but no, it can be done. Sometimes it's due to something called keratoconus, however. And if you have keratoconus, then that's normally a contraindication to laser. But you can do ICLs, you can implant contact lenses that give you permanent vision correction.
My daughter is 24 and has Crohn's disease, and very often her eyes and eyelids become very red, bloodshot and sore. She's using drops for dry eye, but not with a great result. Do you think she needs to be seen by an ophthalmologist? Is there any medication that would help this problem, and is it damaging her eyes?
So the good news is it's not damaging her eyes now, but if she doesn't take care of this on the long term, it may. So Crohn's would be associated with a dry eye. It would make a lot of sense to examine the eye specifically to see if there's not an additional thing like blepharitis. So that can be treated. There are ointments that can be used. There's light therapies that can be used. There's IPL that can be used. I would certainly encourage her, especially if she's young. She's got the rest of her life ahead of her. I'd see an ophthalmologist.
This one, my son is 32, had an accident playing hurling 12 years ago when he was 20. He has a macular hole. Is there anything that can be done now, 12 years after the fact?
Right. So as far as I'm aware, and I used to do a lot of retinal work myself, and I've tried to keep up to speed with what people are doing, is macular hole surgery today is very successful for a recent macular hole. But I think if it's been out for longer than a few weeks, I think that becomes a lot more difficult. 12 years, my initial answer would be no, but I'm open to correction.
This one, I'm not sure what I'm talking about here. I'm a 26-year-old woman with a strabismus issue. Will my sight definitely improve with surgery, or will the risk of increased diplopia be significant?
That's a very good question. And this is one of those, again, where you'd want to test this before the time, that you don't regret the decision. So this person has a turn in their eyes, and when the turn is straightened, it seems like she has double vision. So her brain's become accustomed to the one eye dominating, and the vision there is on her macula. In the other eye, it's in the wrong part of the eye, and the macula's got a different image that it's looking at. And the moment the two eyes are straightened out, you might land up being a double vision. So the way to correct this is to, first of all, correct the vision with a prism in the glasses and then see what the symptoms look like. And if it creates double vision, our brains don't tolerate double vision well at all. It's a really difficult thing to process. So I would certainly ask them to see a strabismus specialist. We have an adult strabismus specialist in Ireland now who only sees adults with strabismus, also at the Eye and Ear, Edward Lone. And he'd be a very good person to see to make the decision on should you have surgery, yes or no.
Can the long-term use of allopurinol cause decreased vision as gout tablets?
Yeah. Not that I'm aware of. Not that I'm aware of at all. Not allopurinol, no.
And a final question for the moment. Is blindness hereditary?
It could be. Depends on what kind. So some of the genetic types are like Leber's optic neuropathy. So some of those are retinitis pigmentosa. Some of them are X-linked. So the boys get them. The mothers carries the condition. So some are. So blindness is a broad topic.
But it can be.
It can be.
I presume that someone with blindness in the family and is wondering whether or not
it
might apply to them. Very interesting stuff, and the questions flooding in. Arthur Cummings, who's a consultant eye surgeon at the Wellington Eye Clinic at the Beacon. Arthur, thank you very much for joining us.
The Pat Kenny Show, Saturday and Sunday from 10 a.m. on News Talk. Conversation that counts.